Live from America's finest city, this is Real Talk San Diego on ESPN 1700. And now, your hosts, Ryan White.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Happy Thursday, everybody out there. We have with us today Karen Cassino with the Cassino CPA firm. She is a three-time repeat offender now, right?
Yeah.
You're not sick of this yet, huh?
Not yet.
Okay. Okay, so she's setting the bar pretty high, right? Three times. We're going to get it right.
I think so.
Nothing was
so.
Right before.
I hope
Nothing
so.
Was right before, but this time for sure.
But if I don't, but if I get it right today, I don't get to come back?
Well, I didn't say that. I didn't say that. Her website is Fraud Safe CPA. Fraud Safe CPA. So she is a CPA, right? That is the official title, but not a whole lot of form numbers we're going to talk, right? We're not doing tax returns here. Tell us your specific niche in that world.
I am a forensic accountant, so I get hired on litigation cases, but particularly I get hired on a lot of family law cases where there is a suspicion that somebody is not telling the truth about their finances or hiding money from someone, or sometimes an employee is stealing from a company. Somebody suing someone because they did something to their business. So I do the number side of litigation mostly.
Got it. One more time, her website, fraudsafecpa.com. Well, since you mentioned family law, that brings us to our next guest. Moriel Cohen is a family law attorney with Marcus Family Law. We've had Ethan on here a few times, so she does work with Ethan. Her website is barefootlawyer.com. That's her website, barefootlawyer.com. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Ryan.
So maybe it's not obvious. Maybe it is obvious. We're going to talk about divorce today. And couple different aspects. One is how to prevent it, and two is should you not be able to prevent it, some of the mistakes that are a little bit comical actually to avoid if you find yourself in that situation, right?
Yes.
Not the most uplifting topic, but nonetheless important stuff. Okay, so causes of divorce and ways to avoid it. Karen, this is stuff that you kind of have and your area of expertise. And I guess what I mean by that is you see this, right? This isn't necessarily the number crunching part of it, but this is the real life part of what you do. The people behind the Excel spreadsheets you're making, if you will.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. The actual personalities of the people. And after having done this for, 27 years, and seeing all the people that have gone through this, some of the commonalities of maybe why they ended up sitting there in front of me fighting over their finances or going to Moriel for their actual divorce.
So you have here, explain how expensive and devastating the process can be. And there is the old joke to suggest divorce is expensive and why? Because it's worth it. Right? That we all have heard. But in reality, when we're talking about expensive, really, what are we talking about? I mean, how much? You've got that as big one, expensive and devastating.
So the hourly rates for people that you're going to hire if you are going through a divorce here in San Diego will range anywhere from probably the low end of $275 an hour all the way up to, I think there's some people here that are $600 an hour. And we all work on an hourly basis. And a lot of what we do is very time consuming. For instance, Moriel goes to court. She spends a whole day there. She spends a day prepping. You know, you're already, that's several thousand dollars just for a one day appearance. So what's expensive is the whole process is expensive. If you're going to go get into the divorce kind of area, you can do it inexpensively. You can do it on your own. You don't hire attorneys. You certainly can do that. Most people don't and need the help. And so it's very expensive. Very, very, it's tens and thousands of dollars. I've worked on several divorces where it's been millions of dollars. Sometimes, and Moriel and I were talking about this before we came in, there's people that spend tens and thousands of dollars and they're fighting over $10,000, and they're willing to spend $30,000 fighting over it. So You don't have complete control over that, too. There's two of you. And if one of you hires somebody that, you know, is aggressive and that party tells the attorney, I want you to make that person pay, and your attorney has to respond to it, even though you're reasonable, if the other person isn't, it's expensive. It's just expensive. What I mean by devastating is not only is it financially devastating, because a lot of people don't have hundreds and thousands of dollars in their bank account, but it's devastating to your pocketbook as well as the family, the kids, the, you know, your life. Your life is now going to be completely different. What people don't kind of think about when they're doing this is you're taking one family, you're making it two, and you have the same amount of money that you had before. So what does that tell you? Well, you're not going to be able to live the same life that you lived before.
Right.
That's a shocking thing to some people when they come in to see us. And I know Marielle's looking and going, yeah, you know, and they look at you and go, well, I still want to live in the same house and do the same things and do everything I did before. And it's impossible unless somebody's making double what they made before. So it is devastating. It's devastating financially for the family. It's you really want to avoid it if at all possible.
So we're talking with Karen Cassino, the Cassino CPA firm. Her website is fraudsafecpa.com. That's her website, fraudsafecpa.com. And just to back up a little bit, really the reason we're discussing this is this show is about the business of living in San Diego. And obviously divorce exists outside of San Diego, but we talk a lot about wealth accumulation. How do you invest? How do you make more? How does it grow? And frankly, one of the biggest ways to not see it go away or cut in half, as you just described, is to not go through a divorce. I mean, we're talking about making 5, 10, 15, 20% a year. You just described a situation where you're taking a 50% loss.
Yes.
So it's really not to say there aren't emotional factors involved. Obviously they are. But it is a huge, or could be a huge, financial loss to take that same amount of money and split it between two families.
It's not only that, but you are giving 50% plus the fees on top of it. Mm-hmm. That's what people forget about, is they think the fees come out of thin air or out of some place that isn't their pocket. And it is their pocket. It is coming out of that 100%, which you're giving 50% away, and you're going to be paying fees on top of it. And for a lot of people, you're going to be paying support in the future on that too. So what you're making in the future is going to be divided up. Sometimes as much as 40% is paid for spousal and child support. So out of your 100% you're going to make in the future, 40% goes to taxes. Well, not 40, but 30 to 40, and 40% goes to your ex-spouse. And so you're living on very little in the future also. So what you really need to do is think about it before you get married.
Well, that brings it to your second point here. If you're not already married, make a wise choice, which I think all of our parents would recommend to us, right? I'm sure is a recommendation you give your daughter, right? Make a wise choice, right? Don't settle. Discuss key issues, including kids, core values, goals, and how everyday life is going to work. That is, I grant you, a very good thing to do. It would be humorous if I was to have had this conversation with my wife 15 years ago to decide what everyday life would be like. I think you'd be amazing if I had that conversation, recorded it, and played it back today. Obviously, it changes drastically, but it doesn't mean it's a bad idea to iron it out as your best guess. 15 years ago, our everyday life is much more chaotic than I would have expected 15 years ago, but that's how it goes, right? I mean, we're making the best guess we can.
Yeah, you are. You know, you can look at things like the person's family, how they were raised. That's typically probably where they're going to end up. You know, you don't have unrealistic expectations, because that's what I'm going to talk about throughout my little part here. Is you can't look at someone and say, oh, well, he's going to change, or gosh, this whole world is going to be so much better once we get married.
Right.
It's not. You
he's
have core
change.
Values that you have the expectation of a certain thing, and the other person has an expectation of something. I have a couple right now that he wants to travel and enjoy life and not have any responsibilities, and she wants to, you know, have children and all of these obligations, and those core values, those very fundamental things weren't discussed before they got married. And these are older people that probably should have talked about these things in advance. You know, where do you see yourself in 5 years? I know it sounds so corny. You always hear it in a job interview, right? But really, I want to be a multi-billionaire, and I'm going to work 90 hours a week to do that. And the other person's looking and going, that's not what I want. I want to live a humble life, you know. So these are really core things that if you talk about them before you even get married, it's almost like when you go on a dating website, you put in your particulars. Well, even though you're not going on a dating website necessarily, but do that and just say, well, what is it you're expecting? Where do you want to be? Where do you see yourself? Do you see yourself being the one working 80 hours a week, or I want to work part time. I don't care about all these material things. I don't care about wealth accumulation. I just want to sit and eat bonbons and watch TV every night. So those are things, you know, we see so much, and I'm looking at Marielle, she probably sees couples too, and we look at them and we go, how did you guys ever get married? How were you ever married? Who thought this was a good decision to take these two people who are so different and get married and think that this is going to work down the road?
You know, Karen, I see this a lot in children's situation where, you know, one person is a stay-at-home mom or dad and the other is working. And that decision sometimes comes in the middle of the marriage. And then after a long divorce, when one spouse has given up a lot and given up a career to stay at home and raise the kids, and then there's a divorce, there's that expectation that the spouse will go back to work and be able to kind of be at that standard of living or live the life that they enjoyed during the marriage. And oftentimes that doesn't happen. Because it takes training and education to get back into the workforce after being out of it for so long. So that's also something to talk about is, you know, if there are going to be kids, is one parent going to stay at home to raise them or work part-time or work full-time? That's important.
Yeah, a lot of questions and a lot of answers, more importantly, that need to go through. So Karen, although CPA, again, background, it kind of seems like we're seeing the kinder, gentler side of the fraud investigative CPA today. One more time, Karen Cassino, her website, fraudsafecpa.com. That's the website, fraudsafecpa.com. When we come back, we're going to hear from Marielle Cohen with the Marcus Family Law Group talking about how to avoid mistakes should you find yourself in the divorce situation. Ahead of us when we come back. Welcome back. We've been talking with Karen Cassino with the Cassino CPA firm. Her website, fraudsafecpa.com. That's the website, fraudsafecpa.com. We're going to shift gears here, and frankly, it's not a huge shift in terms of the gears. We're going to speak with Marielle Cohen, family law attorney, Marcus Family Law. Her website, barefootlawyer.com, barefootlawyer.com. And so we talked first about how to avoid divorce, and obviously it's not forever avoidable. And now we're going to talk a little about if you find yourself in that situation, well, what mistakes you can avoid. And I guess you're talking about really the most avoidable, right? And I'm sure there's many more than five, but these are the five most avoidable mistakes through the divorce. Now, you have here number one, focus on the future instead of the past. I would imagine there's a lot of animosity going around and you find yourself a bit of a therapist in these situations. Tell us a little bit about that.
So the main issue with that is that going back to what Karen was saying about your divorce fees, if you are hiring an attorney to help you with your divorce, and you're still kind of focused on everything that went wrong in your marriage,
right,
and all the emotional issues and the baggage, and you're still not over that, it's very hard to start planning for the future and actually coming to terms that you are now separating and you're going to be divorced. And
like, he never took the trash out and she didn't do the dishes. Is that the kind of stuff we're talking about, that people have lingering or worse?
It could be emotional abuse during the marriage. Maybe there were expectations that weren't met, or, you know, the way the finances were handled. It can be all kinds of things. I had a case, and one woman was bitter that she always did all the organizing and spent all of her money and cared for him. And he kind of just kept his stuff separate, his income, his property. And she's saying, well, you know, and all the emotional abuse and the way he treated her. And so she said, there's something has, I should get something from that. And unfortunately, California is a no-fault divorce state. So the mistakes and things that were done during the marriage doesn't necessarily change the outcome of how property is divided or how what type of support you get.
Well, that's interesting. So there are fault divorce states, I guess?
Fault does come into play in certain things like domestic violence and custody and visitation. And I'm not saying it doesn't come into play, but financially you don't get reimbursed for the pain and angst you may have had.
But in other states you might. Where there are fault states out there, I guess is what you're saying.
I believe so, yes.
Got it. Interesting. And so the pain and angst may come into play in a fault state with respect to, you know, dividing up assets and stuff like that elsewhere.
Right.
But in California, doesn't matter how much he took care of her or she took care of him, no fault.
There's certain states you should move to, people, if you're going to be doing that and you want to get reimbursed for that sort of stuff, you definitely
need to move elsewhere.
Yeah, there's also states that aren't 50-50, and so like Texas and Arizona, yeah, those are good states for stuff.
What do you mean
like
they're not
50-50? They're not 50-50 states.
So it doesn't get split down the middle?
It does not get split down the middle.
Really?
Uh-huh. And all you have to do is, here I'm giving you some advice to people that are listening. You only have to establish your residency for 6 months in most of those states. So you just have to talk him or her into moving to Texas or Arizona or some of these other, now North Dakota.
Know.
Some don't have spousal support.
Oh.
Texas really doesn't have spousal support. So, yeah. California is your worst state for... You know, you can get away with anything. It is 50-50. No, you don't get punished for anything. There certainly is states where if you're cheating or you're doing something that is considered bad, that you get punished for that.
Well, you could get punished in California if you're a perpetrator of domestic violence. You later,
I should hope. Yeah.
If you commit that and then the victim is the one that made the money, you can't, you know, going back and later and asking for support, there are presumptions against that. And may not be so easy to get that support if you perpetrated the domestic violence and for good reason. But you really don't want to take out all that emotional stuff with your attorney, taking up the time. You are being billed by the hour. And maybe it's better to get a therapist and work that stuff out rather than trying to wage a war in the divorce and where only the attorneys win, really.
Right. So I'm sure you counsel your clients on, hey, I'm not a therapist. I mean, I'll listen. I'm here to listen. Right. But that's not my primary role. And let's not go, you know, punitive with respect to what we're suing about. But I would imagine it still happens. Right. How often are people not, seeking out for emotional support and guidance and able to control that and keep it purely financial? I would imagine that happens all the time.
No, it does. And we wear many different hats as attorneys, and that is part of the role. But a good attorney should advise the client, this is what it's going to cost you if we're going to go down this road. This is what you're looking at. These are just advising them of their options and letting them make informed decisions as to what is in their best interest financially for the kids, what's life going to look like after the divorce, and trying to leave those emotional things to the side.
Got it. We're talking with Moriel Cohen, family law attorney with Marcus Family Law. Her website is barefootlawyer.com. That's her website, barefootlawyer.com. So I'm going to go off topic here for just a second. Now, my wife doesn't watch a ton of TV, but if there ever is a Housewives of Somewhere, she's interested. Doesn't matter where they are. She wants to see a Housewives of Somewhere. And I walked in and, you know, somebody who's getting divorced by somebody else and they're citing irreconcilable differences. And every time I hear some big celebrity getting divorced, they're citing irreconcilable differences. Is that always what happened? I mean, are there other choices? Do I have other choices to cite as the reason? It seems like that's always what people say.
That's usually the most common. You can get divorced if there was polygamy. Your marriage may not be valid if that person married you while being married to someone else.
No, that makes sense.
Maybe. Isn't there only like three reasons? It's irreconcilable differences and something like legal, like you already married, or crazy.
Right, or crazy. By fraud or duress. Maybe you had some sort of arranged marriage, and that does, I've seen that here where people...
Fraud or duress?
Right.
So irreconcilable differences is the most neutral in terms of reasons. Got it. Right. That makes sense. No fraud, duress, or polygamy.
Or crazy.
Or crazy.
Okay. Medically crazy.
Children in the middle. I mean, I think that in a perfect situation, getting through this without phasing the children would be ideal. I have to imagine that's never possible. But what do you mean by putting children in the middle?
I mean, not exposing them to court papers, to the discussions, to what happened at the hearing, daddy's going broke because he's paying all the support to your mom, and just getting them involved and almost putting them in a position where they have to choose a side that doesn't ever serve one party or the other in the divorce, and usually does come out and is frowned upon by the court. And beyond that, it just hurts the relationship with the children. So it doesn't necessarily gain you an advantage to try to get the child on your side and to talk bad about the other parent. It probably works against you with your relationship.
Yeah, I can see how a parent might utilize the child to sway an opinion one way or another, or, you know, information about one time, you know, when the kid is spending time with mom, now dad is asking him for information about what's going on at mom's house and vice versa. I would imagine that happens a lot, doesn't it?
With the older children, yes. Even younger children, just hearing things or the parent making offhand comments, that does impact the children. Or trying to bribe the child, you know, once this divorce is over, I'll buy you a car. I've seen
right,
that.
Sure.
And so obviously and the child thinks, well, if I choose to go with dad or choose to go with mom, I'll get this on the other end. And sometimes that's motivated by child support, not wanting to pay child support or wanting to pay less child support or trying to get more of a timeshare with that child. But it really does not do the family any justice or help the children in the divorce when they're put in the middle.
We're talking with Moriel Cohen, family law attorney with Marcus Family Law. Her website is barefootlawyer.com. That's her website, barefootlawyer.com. So you kind of mentioned bringing the child into this and how we shouldn't do that, of course. But I think in addition to that, reasons and having the child choose one or the other, you just brought something up. In addition to the emotional desire to be with your kids, potentially, if you have 50% custody, you're paying less child support, right? I mean, that's the idea. If you're in charge of them half the time, you're paying less. Is that right?
Well, child support is calculated by the state guidelines. So it could be that it all depends. It depends on the incomes of each of the parties, the timeshares, the deductions that they take tax-wise. So there's a variety of factors that are incorporated into this calculation. But, you know, if one party has zero income and they have 50% and the other party has, they make $6,000-$7,000 a month there and they have 50%, they will be paying child support.
Makes sense.
Right.
Okay.
But sometimes the decisions as to, you know, getting more time with the kids when one parent has spent very little is motivated by, you know, I'll pay less child support if I have more time with the child. So
right.
It may not be in the best interest of the child. Maybe it's a young child who's been with mom, who's been a stay-at-home mom, and now dad wants to take on that role. Maybe they're not really time-wise available to that child, but they want to pay less support, so they're fighting for it.
And in the end, really, what they're going for is, of course, time with the kid, but the backhanded side of that is potentially less child support.
Right.
Got it. Again, we're talking with Moriel Cohen, family law attorney, Marcus Family Law. When we come back, we're going to hear more from Karen Cassino for ways to avoid divorce. You have, well, lessons learned, items A through F ahead of us when we come back. Well,
Welcome back. We've been talking with Moriel Cohen, family law attorney with Marcus Family Law. Their website, barefootlawyer.com, barefootlawyer.com. Going over the five avoidable mistakes not to make when going through a divorce. Going to shift gears here back to Karen Cassino, fraudsafecpa.com. That's the website, fraudsafecpa.com. And we're talking about ways to avoid divorce. And you've got a long list here of lessons learned, right? I'm gonna pick out D because my dad says this to me and actually said it just recently today, well, to my son, to tell you the truth. You are responsible for your own happiness. I think he was mad about having to put his shoes on, to tell you the truth. But ultimately, you're responsible for your own happiness. I know what it meant in that case. What does it mean when it comes to avoiding divorce?
Well, we have a lot of people that come in and they have their laundry list of why they're unhappy and he did this and he did that and he didn't do this and he didn't do that. And frankly, you have responsibility for your own happiness. It can't always be, even though you're married and you're partners, you can't look at the other person and expect them to do everything for you. And to guess what, Moriel will know this too, read your mind too. You didn't tell them what it was you wanted. You just expected that they would do A, B, and C and do exactly what you wanted them to do, but you never told them what you were expecting or what you wanted them to do. And you didn't do anything actively on your part to make something happen. You just sat back and didn't say anything, didn't do anything on your part. And then the person didn't live up to your expectations. So now you're upset about it. And then you are resentful because now this has been years and years and years of him not listening or him not doing this or him
not. Whoa, him?
Well, I'm a female. So I am just, it's not always that way. No, I will definitely say it's not always that way. There are, but you know what? I have to say that we see more of the females that come in that are harboring resentment and, you know, he didn't listen to me and he disregards my feelings. He doesn't think I'm important, those sort of things. And really that's, and it's not always this way, but when you have roles like we used to have many years ago, we don't necessarily have that now. But when we have roles and there's husband has a role, wife has a role, define those roles. What is, and this is what we go back to my topic before, is talk about that before you get married, is what you're expecting. Are you expecting her to work, take care of the kids? You know, I always kind of look at families and go, well, who was going to take care of the kids? You were going to have kids, but nobody ever talked about who's going to take. You're both going on your careers and you didn't think about, well, what's going to happen? Why do we have kids then if we are both so busy? So these are things that you should talk about. But also you yourself have to take some responsibility for your own happiness and tell the person, this is what I'm expecting. But the other person isn't there existing in this world to make you happy. I know that's a big surprise, but they aren't. You know, everybody, your partners, you're working on this marriage together. You have hopefully made a commitment to each other for the rest of your life or until things go wrong. But, you know, you really can't, you're setting the person up for failure is some of what my topics today are, is if you are expecting something that is unrealistic and you never voice it, then probably it's going to fail.
Talking with Karen Cassino with the Cassino CPA firm. Her website is fraudsafecpa.com, fraudsafecpa.com. Kind of seeing the kinder, gentler side of Karen Cassino. She is works with a lot of family law attorneys and, of course, in the CPA fraud and guest investigative space. And really, if people followed your outline today, you'd be out of a job.
I would be, but there probably would still be people stealing money from companies and things like that. And
okay,
there's still going to be people suing each other. They just won't be going through divorce. But, you know, that being said, Moriel would probably agree with me. There are real situations where people are going to get divorced no matter how hard they try. And that is, you know, people that have been married a long time and maybe they really grew apart and they did everything they could. They did everything right. They really talked about things ahead of time. They, you know, it just happens. And they're reasonable people and they work together towards a settlement. Maybe they can remain friends after the divorce. I mean, that's the best world. We don't see that all that often, but it does happen. I mean, it can happen. There still will be enough cases that probably a third of us in town could keep busy and the other two thirds would have to find something else to do. But
Got it. Okay. So A, he/she cheated, right? I would imagine that leads to a lot of problems.
So we get cases, they come in and we'll, you know, and I don't always, because I'm the forensic, I'm the financial person, I don't always ask, why are you getting divorced? But Moriel always does. And their first thing as they say is, well, he, let's go with, so I don't upset Ryan. She cheated.
Thank you.
Okay. She cheated. But that's not the cause. That's a symptom. That's a result of something else that was going wrong in that relationship or marriage. It usually isn't they just randomly cheat. There's usually unhappiness or something else that caused that to happen. What I think both Marielle and I would say is, if you can avoid that, that's a good
thing.
That makes sense. Because it becomes all about that, and it's not all about that. It's not all about that. That's what you hear everybody talk about. And then they get hyper-focused on that person and she did, you know, that. How dare she or he? And it becomes all about that. And it's not all about that. It was about something that went wrong before that. What is just terrible and I really don't like is when there is another person involved, the other woman or the other man, and your client brings them into meetings. And,
oh,
you know.
So all three are there?
They,
in
well,
this case, the wife and her new
boyfriend will come.
And the husband that presumably the boyfriend was around while the husband was still in the picture.
Yes.
Yeah, I could see that'd be a little awkward.
And that's not a good thing. It's even when the other party's not around or in a mediation or a trial or something like that. It's just not it's not good for this person who is a third wheel in this situation. One, to know about your finances. Two, I am skeptical. And Marielle and I know this person probably doesn't have your best intentions at heart. They probably are going to use this information. I don't trust those people. And so, in other words, don't try not to do it, and then don't involve them in your divorce process.
Try not to do it. That's good advice.
Try not to do it, and don't involve them in the divorce process. Don't bring them to meetings with your forensic accountant or your attorney, because we're going to kick them out because they shouldn't be there. And it becomes all about that. And if you remove that person for a little while and maybe go back and focus on what was the problem that caused that situation to happen, then perhaps there might be some clarity. But as long as that person's still involved, there probably is not going to be clarity.
That makes sense. Lack of clarity.
And 99% of the time, that person is not around in a year or so. So the thought that, oh, I have now found my true love and we're going to get married and move on, and that almost never happens. So and the other thing is, the grass is not greener on the other side. So we hear that all the time. We see people, and we've been doing this long enough that we just look at them and go, they're going to learn. So the lessons learned, they'll learn that, you know, they probably had something pretty good, and had they worked on it rather than just bailing and going the other direction, maybe it would have been better. But I think, Maria, would you agree, most clients that you see that cheated, that they would say to you once they're done that it's not better. Life is not better.
I don't know if we keep in touch that much, so I can keep getting updates on there. But I do know that when that third party is involved and they almost drive the litigation, or the actual wife or husband that has that that person on the side is getting advice from them, it doesn't help make that process smoother. And that third wheel, as you call them, they don't want to resolve it. And it just creates bad feelings for everybody all around. It doesn't help to involve them in the divorce. It won't make everything easier. So it's best to kind of keep them on the side, focus on the divorce, get through it.
End one thing and then start another.
Right.
That's probably a good. Plus, I would say that probably your fees will be a percentage higher when there's a third party involved.
Definitely.
Oh, yeah? Definitely. Things rack up a little bit more. There's more stuff to argue about.
There's more emotion. There's just automatically more emotion, and there's more issues because of that.
There probably is some sort of correlation with how high emotions are on and how high your attorney fees are.
I'm sure there are. There is. I'm sure there are. Yeah, sure. I would imagine so. So, I mean, I think this goes really right along with it. But number C, you've got resentment, which certainly can be established by showing up with your new boyfriend to the divorce, the divorce ceremony, if you will. Resentment and I guess harboring it is really what you're talking about here.
And we see, you kind of mentioned it earlier, Ryan, when you said that they come in and they say, well, he didn't take out the trash and he didn't. We do hear things that menial. We do hear, you know, and they'll give you the list. Well, why are you getting divorced? Well, because he didn't, 10 years ago, he didn't, you know, say hello to my parents when they walked in. And then we went on a family vacation 6 years ago and he didn't go. And he worked too hard and he wasn't listening to me. And so it's just a laundry list. And you kind of, for us professionals that do this, kind of look at them and go, well, why didn't you along the way address these situations? Why let them just live inside you and fester and become bigger than they really were? Because these are not big things, right? When we say them out loud, they're not big things. But when you let them stay inside you and you think about them and you really, you know, keep festering and just really thinking about it over and over. And every time that person does that again, then you get even madder because, oh, that's just like you did that 10 years ago. And so really what I see a lot of times is a couple that has been married maybe 20 years and they're sitting in front of me. And you know, a lot of cases I see, and I can't speak for Marielle, but a lot of ones I see there, you know, these are wealthy people now. They've done very well for themselves. And then we listen to the wife and this is a typical symptom, not typical, but husband's worked, wife is kind of worked maybe, but the husband's made a lot of money. And you hear the wife complain about, well, he didn't do this and he didn't do that. And he always, you know, He would never listen to me and he wasn't available to me. And you know, we're sitting back and going, yeah, he built an $80 million estate and he was working 8 hours a week. So maybe this is something you should have talked about. But you just hear the negative. And what is good, and I know this sounds so touchy-feely, but there, you know, I look at it and I'm looking at two people and I think, well, these are both nice people. And this guy is a pretty good guy. And you're unhappy because of all these kind of little things that could have been addressed had you just said, hey, would you, you know, this is really important for me for you to go on this vacation with us. Or, you know, and this goes back to the responsible for your own happiness and telling people what you expect. Because if you don't, then they don't know that's what they're supposed to do. And 20 years down the road, you're sitting there with this great estate and what could be an awesome life. And they probably did have in some respects an awesome life. But they've let these little things build up to something that is huge and it really isn't huge. And we advisors sitting across the table from them are kind of going, gosh, it doesn't sound like it's that bad. You know, I'm looking at this situation. It's not that bad.
We're talking with Karen Cassino, the Cassino CPA firm, fraudsafecpa.com is her website, fraudsafecpa.com, talking about some of the kinder, gentler sides of being a forensic investigative CPA, fraud investigative CPA. When we come back, we will hear more from Marielle Cohen with Marcus Family Law on avoidable mistakes not to make when going through a divorce. Welcome back. We've been talking with Karen Cassino, the Cassino CPA firm, her website, fraudsafecpa.com. I'm going to shift back to five avoidable mistakes not to make when going through a divorce. Marielle Cohen, family law attorney with Marcus Family Law. We talked about focusing on the future instead of the past. We talked about not putting the children in the middle of the divorce. We're going to move on to advertising your divorce. And what do you mean by that?
I mean, social media, Facebook, Twitter, you know, putting things on those sites that could backfire in your divorce. For example, if your position is that, you know, I don't have money to pay support, I'm struggling to help out my disabled spouse, I just went through a bankruptcy, I really don't have the money that wife says I have, and then we have pictures of your Hawaii vacation or your vacation to the Grand Canyon, and that's all very recent, that could put that to question. And if also if you say, I need the money for support, I don't have it, and you're advertising your fancy dinners and how you're going to take your spouse to the cleaners on your social media, that could come out in court and be put in an exhibit in front of the judge. Even if your profile is private,
can find it.
Right. A friend of a friend, especially if you're in the same circles, you have similar friends, that will come out.
So I would imagine additionally, your new flame, you know, let's say cozy pictures with somebody else advertised on Facebook is probably a bad idea. Yeah. Would make sense. I have a couple friends who it seems like every time they sneeze, they post something about, you know, whatever they happen to do. And I would say, yeah, that's probably a departure. If they were going through a divorce or had a new fling, it would probably make its way on there. So there are people out there, I find, that are compelled to overshare on Facebook, and there's multiple other social media outlets. And I think what you're saying is it can be brought into court.
Right. I mean, it's not necessarily it will make its way in front of the judge if you have a good attorney and can keep that stuff out. But you can't unring a bell. And if the judge has already looked at it, then it's going to be difficult to get past and to justify.
Right. Because the judge is the one deciding what spousal support is to go and stuff like that. If he sees the Hawaii vacation at the Four Seasons, it makes it tough for him to take leniency. Am I understanding that right?
Yeah, the judge has the discretion. Unless the parties are able to reach some sort of agreement beforehand, it is ultimately up to the judge.
Ultimately up to the judge. Okay. Failing to adjust your standard of living post-separation. And we kind of touched on that before. Theoretically, same amount of money is in the family. Now you're splitting it between two households, right? So one would think the standard of living across the boards is going to change. Yeah?
Right. So you have to have your short-term goals and your long-term goals. And while initially in the divorce, the whole purpose is to try to keep your status quo and to keep your standard of living, and you may have some temporary support, you have to think down the line and how you're going to survive on that one income. Are you going to stay in the house, and can you afford the mortgage? Can you buy your spouse out of their interest? What's going to happen to the credit card bills and expenses that you have currently, that timeshare? Everything kind of has to be accounted for. And short term, who's going to have the kids when, what your custody situation will be long term. Can you really maintain that in light of the different work schedules? So short term and long term goals, and the attorney should be able to help you work through those. So, you know, at the end of the day, when your divorce is concluded, that you can you can continue, that you made the right decision in your divorce settlement.
We're talking with Moriel Cohen, family law attorney with Marcus Family Law. Her website is barefootlawyer.com. That's the website, barefootlawyer.com. And so most recently, we've been talking about adjusting your standard of living post-separation. And it seems like that's probably a difficult thing to do. I mean, maybe people assume life will not be different once divorced from a financial perspective, and maybe people do assume and hope life will be different, maybe not from a financial perspective, but I would imagine that can be a big eye-opener for a lot of people. The person that was perhaps home taking care of the kids now all of a sudden has to make a living, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
Right, or they're not thinking about that, and they're just keeping, you know, putting things on the credit card, living as they were living on the two incomes or on the income of their spouse. And it's just not realistic. And the attorney really should set that expectation. And maybe they do need to sit down with someone like Karen who can advise them, you know, this is, you know, where you need to start budgeting now. It's not a free for all. And you're not going to have this support forever. And you can't, you're going to end up in a bankruptcy or, you know, credit card debt. And you need to, you know, really kind of sit down and analyze what your finances are and what you can manage now and what you'll be able to manage in the future.
That makes sense. So liquidating or disposing of assets. And so I think what you're saying here, and you'll get is after someone files for divorce, there are rules about what you can do with your money?
There are the rules. It's the automatic temporary restraining order. So once someone files for divorce, one spouse can't take the other off of any insurance policies. You can't take them off of bank accounts. You can't start selling assets. You can continue to live as you were for your basic living expenses and pay to hire your attorney, but you can't start selling the Harley Davidson to pay for whatever it is that you may need or you know, and not tell the other spouse about it, because at the end you can end up in a situation where the court orders you to either pay that back or something that may have been only 50% yours and 50% to the other spouse can end up being awarded 100% to the other spouse. If you take some actions that are breaching your fiduciary duty. So you have this obligation to be on the up and up with your spouse, to disclose everything and not do backhanded things that can ultimately go against you in the divorce.
Now, Karen, I would imagine that, you know, being a fraud CPA in that regard, you're tracking down potentially some of these backhanded things that might happen, right? Well, I guess maybe right before or right after a divorce is filed. I would imagine that's some of what you do, right?
You know, when it starts a lot of times, and why I have to ask the question, we go back to the cheating and the third person, is it frequently starts around the time that that third person came into the picture. And so it is around the time it's been the divorce came into being. But if there's been an affair for 10 years, we have to look back 10 years because that's a lot of times what happened way back when.
Got it. Well, ladies, I want to thank you both once more time. Morielle Cohen, family law attorney, Marcus Family Law. Her website is barefootlawyer.com. That's the website, barefootlawyer.com. And Karen Casino, the casino CPA firm, fraudsafecpa.com. That's the website, fraudsafecpa.com. Ladies, I want to thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Until next week. Thank you.